Our final distinguished speaker before questions is Ambassador Edward Peck, currently the CEO of Foreign Service International. Ambassador Peck has served as the U.S. Chief of Mission to Iraq in the 1980s and has also served diplomatic functions in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Egypt, and Mauritania. Since retiring, Ambassador Peck has served as Executive Secretary of the American Academy of Diplomacy, Chairman of Political Tradecraft Programs at the National Foreign Affairs Training Center, and as a lecturer and consultant to businesses and governments and the media in the U.S. and overseas. Ambassador Peck?
I recognize that the people sitting in this room all know a good deal about the subject I'm about to discuss. Some of you may, in fact, know more. And I also recognize that many of you sitting in this room have already come to conclusions long before you have to sit and listen to someone like myself talk. My task is an interesting one. I don't have to discuss policies. I don't have to discuss necessarily individuals involved in them. I'm supposed to talk about what will face the next president of the United States in terms of the Middle East, issues that have already been mentioned by the various speakers who preceded me. But let me talk to you about what it is that I fear we have lost. I have served my nation in uniform twice. I had active duty tours with the paratroopers in the Army, and I have served my nation as a civilian working for the Department of State overseas. I have the honor and privilege of representing the American people in six Muslim countries in the Middle East and North Africa, which gives me some understanding of how this works. My government spent a great deal of time and effort in training me and my colleagues to be able to live with, work with, and talk with, and understand the people in these countries for one express purpose, to be able to tell my government how these people out here viewed various things. Many of you have had similar experiences. There was an earlier reference to what happens to messengers. Because quite often, the government does not want to hear what I feel it is my responsibility to tell them. I don't have to agree with what the other people think. I don't have to accept the ideas of the other people, but my purpose is to understand them so I can tell my government about it. So I don't work for the government anymore, and I can speak considerably more freely, and I will do it now. The next president of the United States, whoever it is going to face a major task in the Middle East, because we have lost out there just about everything. Start with our image, the image of the United States of America. Whatever it was before our involvement in Afghanistan and Iraq is surely sadly diminished now, if not destroyed. We are pushing for democracy. Now think about this for a second, ladies and gentlemen. By definition, you cannot impose democracy. We know this. An imposed democracy is a dictatorship. You can't force people to be democratic. That's an oxymoron, a contradiction in terms. Democracy goes from the bottom up, not from the top down, and certainly not from the outside in. That's not how you do it. That isn't what democracy is for. But we have made, as of now, democracy has become America's secular religion. And we are prepared to convert people, if necessary, by the sword. You will be democratic. And, you know, this is not how it works. We've lost our credibility. Nobody believes anything we say anymore. And I'm afraid this is a problem shared by many people in the United States. Weapons of mass destruction, of course, serves as the best example imaginable, where even a man like Colin Powell, oozing integrity and credibility from every pore, seems to have destroyed that particular aspect of his image by insisting that there were weapons of mass destruction literally everywhere. By the way, you should know that they have been found there at Graceland. We've lost our respect. You know, for what do we stand? We stand for freedom, justice, international law, human rights, not in the Middle East. Here we are exporting democracy when there are two democracies active in the United States. One is Israel, the other is the United States. In the case of the Israelis, for 37 years, they have demonstrated total disregard for all of the principles for which we stand. Occupation, humiliation, death, torture, expropriation, curfews. And they do that with the support of the United States, financial, military, and political. If you add to that particular aspect of our involvement in the Middle East, what has been happening to the people of Iraq for the last 14 years, then it is not difficult to understand, not supporting, not agreeing with, it is not difficult to understand why some people, fortunately still small in numbers, are prepared to look around for ways to make us sorry we are involved in those kinds of activities. Our nation can do whatever it wants, wherever it wants, whenever it wants, and there is no one who can stop us, even working together. But there are people who will look around for ways to make us regret it. And they have, and they are, and they will. Somewhere in my bio, it should tell you that I was the deputy director of the Cabinet Task Force on Terrorism in the Reagan White House. When we met for the first time with the chairman of that task force, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was vice president, he told us that we had carte blanche to look into every aspect of terrorism. Now, this was in the 80s. Terrorism was a big thing. In Europe, you had the Baader-Meinhof gang and the Red Army brigades. You had the Achille Lauro, TW-847, the Sendero Luminoso, all around the world, lots of terrorism. Mr. Bush said, we want a complete across-the-board in-depth study of this issue. There is, however, one aspect of terrorism with which you do not need to concern yourselves. We all sat forward, pencils poised, and he said, quote, don't worry about causes. The atmosphere in that room became palpable. Don't worry about causes. And that is precisely where our nation is today. If someone is going to suggest to me that they hate us for our freedoms, I find that an insult to my intelligence. Why in the world would anyone hate us because we have freedoms? Now, there are nutcases who hate our policies, as has been said very eloquently, but they don't hate the American people any more than we hate the Iraqi people who have died in our assault on their country. We didn't like their leadership's policies. But you can't attack a policy, so you attack people. Can you imagine the possibility that somewhere there are people who are prepared to kill and die because we have freedom in this country? There are folks out there who may envy us our successes. And there are probably folks out there who resent our excesses. But nobody is going to kill and die because we have freedom or because Britney Spears has a belly button. That's ridiculous. That's offensive to my intelligence. There are people out there, still small in number, who are prepared to consider killing and even dying because from their perception, we are responsible for their people dying and being killed. And they don't like that. They don't like that a lot. And we have been doing it directly in Iraq for 14 years and indirectly in Palestine for 37. Now, you can ignore the fact that people don't like this sort of thing, or you can pretend that they really should like it, but at a cost. And I fear, hoping that I am wrong, that our involvement in Iraq is going to cost our nation dear for a long period of time in many different ways and places. Because we have done terrible, dreadful things which violate every principle for which we say we stand. And this is the message that I would be giving to my government today, were I still working for it. We've lost respect. We have destroyed the English language. We now use phrases which I find, unbelievable, where the President of the United States, the current President, went before the General Assembly of the United Nations in October of 2003, and he made the following statement to the 184 representatives of other countries, listening carefully to the most powerful human on the face of the earth. And he said, and I quote, "Iraq now has a governing council, the first truly representative institution in that country. It may represent Mr. Rumsfeld, but it certainly doesn't represent anything in Iraq." And what scares me, you see, is that there was someone with not enough intelligence to leave that statement out, and no one else without enough intelligence to take it out and to let our president make a statement like that. And now today, we have turned over full sovereignty to the Iraqi people. Now, either my government doesn't know what the word sovereignty means, or the rest of the world doesn't. Full sovereignty means full sovereignty, right? And so we have a statement in which we say, yes, we are going to turn over custody of Saddam Hussein to the Iraqi people, but we're going to keep him. All right, I can understand that. And they got full sovereignty, but they have to cooperate with us. And before he left, Mr. Bremer, who is a man I admire and respect, he's a friend, Mr. Bremer issued a whole series of edicts which will remain in force controlling internal affairs in Iraq after the turnover. The turnover of what? Oh, the turnover of sovereignty. Oh, here it is. What are they in charge of? Nothing. Nothing at all. And are we building 14 bases? Indeed we are. And are we leaving soon? We are not. You know, people, even myself, have a hard time dealing with some of the things that my government says because it's warping the English language beyond comprehension. Full sovereignty. I was on a television program the other day winding up, forgive me for this, winding up speaking through the anchor thing with the two automatons that are on loan from Disneyland, Mr. Kimmett, Mr. Senor. You've seen them standing in Iraq talking. They have these mouths animated, so they seem to be moving. And Mr. Kimmett says, we will have the same situation in Iraq that we have in South Korea, where we cooperate with the South Korean government. Unless they are driving tanks through South Korean houses and bombing South Korean villages, I don't think the situation holds as a parallel. We're going to offer the Iraqis the same kind of sovereignty that Mr. Barak offered to Mr. Arafat at Camp David in 2002. You have sovereignty everywhere, but we have authority in most places. Oh, okay. Thank you very much, but no thanks. We've lost lives. We've lost lives. We have inflicted the loss of life on others. Mr. Rumsfeld had said that there were no intention whatsoever on the part of DOD to gather statistics on how many Iraqis died. Ladies, gentlemen, when the Army announces the success of an operation in Fallujah in which they killed 1,500 insurgents, terrorists, those terrorists, or whoever they were, are sons, they're husbands, they are brothers, they are fathers. I do not think the surviving members of their families are going to love us more because those people died. And what's a terrorist? Well, it depends upon which side you're on, however painful that may seem. There's a book that's worth rereading if you've forgotten it called For Whom the Bell Tolls, based upon that saying by John Donne that no man is an island. And this has to do with Americans who went to Spain in the 30s. Do you remember to fight the fascists? They called themselves the Lincoln Brigade. Were they heroes or were they terrorists? Well, the fascists called them terrorists, I'm sure. But they considered themselves to be heroes, fighting evil as they saw it. And those people going to Iraq today to fight the American aggressor are terrorists. But our country knows about that. You remember Lafayette? Remember Baron von Steuben? Those terrorists came here to help us fight ourselves free from British tyranny, so-called. I'm very depressed because whoever wins in the next election, it's going to be very difficult to offset what I consider to be shatteringly important losses. I think it will be much easier if it's a different administration. only because the current administration is responsible for getting us where we are, which has redounded to no one's benefit, certainly not to the people in the Middle East, and certainly not to the people of the United States. My view. Thank you very much.